Thank you. Please be seated. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioners consolidated Eastern Northwest Partners v. Gonzalez.
May it please the court, Ms. Pamela Stantivera will present argument for petitioner. Mr. Vincent Lee, Mary Hill III, will present argument for the real parties in interest. Ms. Barron will open the first 15 minutes.
May it please the court. In 1984, this court held in C v. Hall that a statutory probate court lacks jurisdiction to hear a wrongful death and survival case. Since that time, much has changed. The legislature has repeatedly amended the probate code in 85, in 89, in 93, in 97, and again in 1999 to make two things clear. First, statutory probate courts do have jurisdiction to hear death and injury actions. And second, statutory probate courts have the power to transfer death and injury actions, and the power to transfer is coextensive with jurisdiction. The question before the court today is this: is a statutory probate court's broad authority to transfer barred in death, injury, and property damage cases when venue is proper in another county by reason of Section 1507 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, which overrides conflicting venue provisions of the probate code?
Is it your position that this statutory march has been continually onward and upward towards probate nirvana, or was there a post-C reaction to say, the broadest possible scope of probate court jurisdiction?
Well, I think the modern era of probate court jurisdiction probably began with changes in 73, but since that time, we've seen...
85 is clearly, it overruled C, it was clearly an expansion.
Right, it's clearly an expansion.
And maybe there was some more after that, but the last 10 years, you say that still either didn't affect it or it's still a march in that direction?
They are still marching toward broader statutory probate court jurisdiction. In fact, in the 2003 amendments, the jurisdiction provisions were amended again to broaden statutory probate court jurisdiction versus district court jurisdiction. So definitely it has been a trend to broaden, and the jurisdiction and transfer provisions have been amended 9 out of the 10 legislative sessions since 1985. So we've seen a lot of changes there.
Does the word transfer connote to you that it's talking about venue? Because typically when you're talking about transfer, you're talking about transferring from one venue to the next.
I think what you're talking about is moving a case, and you're moving it not because of venue, but you're moving it because of notions of judicial economy and efficiency. The MDL transfer is not a venue transfer. It's a transfer to bring all kinds of cases that are related to each other into a single court so they can be consolidated, coordinated. People who are interested in it can come only to one place to monitor the litigation. So I think it's a different concept than venue, and it may even be a different concept than jurisdiction. What I want to try and talk about are two things. I want to first focus on the transfer provisions because I think there are a number of misconceptions as to their scope and mechanics. Then I want to turn to 1507 and identify what I think are three logical gaps in the reliant majority opinion. Mr. Marable is going to supplement that and address issues particular to guardianships. I'm going to focus a little bit more on decedent estates. I'm going to start with the transfer statutes, and I want to tell you four things those statutes are not. And the first thing they are not is a vehicle limited solely to plaintiffs. By their terms, they expressly allow any party to the action to request a transfer. In a recent article in the Advanced Personal Injury Law Journal, not by Stephen King, the famous fiction writer, but by Steve King, the judge of the probate court of Tarrant County, he writes that in his court, motions to transfer divide roughly evenly among plaintiffs and defendants. And we see this in the cases as well. Great House versus McConnell, in the brief, the defendant in a legal malpractice action asked for the transfer. In Citizens Bank and Trust versus Ertl, the defendant bank asked for the transfer. And it's important to remember that estates can be either plaintiffs or defendants. Let's think of some situations. For example, in a large, complicated estate with a lot of oil and gas holdings, There may have been a blowout or a pollution issue involving a well in West Texas. There may be multiple suits pending in which the estate is a defendant. It would be helpful to be able to move all those into a single court. I'd also note that the statute permits more than just any party to the action to request a transfer. It lets any party interested in the estate. And this includes beneficiaries and includes creditors. And if there are multiple pieces of litigation affecting an estate, a creditor will have a great interest in seeing all those moved into a single court so that the creditor only needs to monitor one action to see if there will be adequate assets to satisfy the claim.
Is it your position that there aren't any conflicting provisions between Chapter 15 and the probate code on vending?
Yes, that's
correct. Why did the legislature enact 15.007? What's the point?
Well, I think that's a two-part inquiry. First, we say, why did they pick the language that they picked, which is to say conflicting venue provisions. And I think at the time that they adopted them, 3 years earlier, there had been a case, Henry versus Legrone, which had expressly said the transfer provisions are not venue statutes. So the legislature was aware that it was not a venue statute at the time it did. The reason for 15.007 is 15.007 was concerned about parties being able to go out and unilaterally pick a forum and bind everyone else to that forum. You cannot do that under the transfer provisions. A party has no right to a transfer. All you can do is ask for a transfer. Plus, 15.007 determines where death, injury, and property damage actions have to be initially filed. And in most situations, that is where they are going to stay.
What provisions of the probate code would interact with 15.007? That's my specific question. What's the point of 15.007 with regards to the probate code?
Okay. We have courts with original probate jurisdiction in every county in the state. And they do have jurisdiction over the estate and matters relating to the estate, including claims fired against the estate. I would say that to the extent that you establish venue for your probate proceeding, that does not necessarily mean that any suits by or against would be determined under the probate proceeding venue provision.
Well, let me understand how this works. I am a widow, and my spouse was killed in Matagorda County.
Right.
And I filed a probate proceeding in Harris County, and I sued for his death in Harris County.
Right.
The defendant has the right to move the venue to Matagorda County.
Yes.
Under 15.07.
Right.
And then you say the probate court has the power to bounce it right back under 5B.
Well, you have to remember that we only have statutory probate courts in 10 counties.
I'm asking, what's the point of 15.007?
If it were filed in any other probate proceeding, in a constitutional court, in a statutory court, or in a district court that has probate jurisdiction, the case would be sent back or to wherever the venue was proper under 15.07, and it would stay there. There was not even an opportunity to ask.
5B lets the probate court take it back.
I'm sorry?
But under your construction, 5B lets the probate court take it back, even though 15.07 requires a transfer, but the probate court can transfer it back.
Well, there are only 10 counties in which there are statutory probate courts that have that option. It's not mandatory. No party has a right to it. And the statutory probate judge makes the decision, kind of like an MDL panel, is it useful to have all these cases together in one court? And it's a different concept at work. It's a judicial economy efficiency concept that's embedded in the transfer provisions. These cases, most of them will stay wherever 1507 says they have to go, because I don't think that many of them are going to come back, because you only have 10 counties that can do it, and you have to have a party asked to do it, and then the court has to allow it.
I'm still not understanding your answer, because let's suppose we're talking about 15.07 specifically talks about venue provisions under the Texas Probate Code with regard to personal injury, death, or property damage claims. And so,
no, it doesn't say with regard. It says with regard to those claims, 15.07 governs over any conflicting venue provisions.
Of the Texas Probate
Code. Right.
And you say there aren't any.
What I'm saying is that the probate court determines where the probate proceeding is proper. It does have jurisdiction over related actions, but just because it can determine venue with respect to the probate proceeding and keep that proceeding in that county does not mean that you can initially file a wrongful death or injury action in that county.
Ms. Barron, is it your position that under 5B, that wherever a a statutory probate court is taking jurisdiction of a wrongful death case, that 15.007 would never preclude that probate court from doing so in those 10 counties where there are statutory probate courts.
If all of the provisions of the transfer statute are met to bring that case into the court, yes, I would agree with that.
So for 10 counties in the state of Texas, then, it sounds like your position is 15.007 has no effect.
No, that's not correct.
Then what effect would it have in those 10 counties?
Well, in those counties, you have multiple courts exercising probate jurisdiction, but if it's initially filed in that county and that is not a proper county, it does have to be transferred as a venue transfer. Then it comes to rest, and at that point...
Well, the venue's improper in the probate court in the first place. That's a different issue. Let's assume venue's proper in the statutory probate court in these 10 counties you talked about.
Right.
Then in that scenario, does 15.007 have any effect on personal injury or wrongful death cases?
Yes, it
does. And that is what?
Okay, if it's initially filed in the probate court, and the probate court would not have venue over the death or injury case, it would need to be transferred to a county in proper venue. Then, either transfer, a 5B or 608 transfer could be initiated. It might not be. And then the question is whether the probate court transfers it back if all of the five provisions of 5B and 608 are met.
Why do you think the legislature didn't amend the Wrongful Death Act at the same time to allow a wrongful death action to be brought directly in the proper in a probate court where the estate was pending?
Well, I don't know that it's necessarily, that either party, either the plaintiff or defendant, would always want it to be in the probate court. And I think that the concept was under the transfer provisions, the statutory probate judge has very broad discretion in determining whether to transfer these cases, and that's where the decision should lie. It should not lie with a single party to unilaterally bind someone to a particular forum. That's not permitted under the transfer statutes. One other thing I want to observe about the transfer statutes is nothing in them limits transfers to counties within the same county. And I would submit to the court that the probate bar has always understood these provisions as permitting inter-county transfers. And we see that reflected in 25.00221 of the government code, which is in our handout. I'm sorry, it's not in our brief. It's at the top of the second page or third page. In 2001, the legislature amended the government code because a problem had arisen, and that was statutory probate courts were transferring cases in from other counties, and they were losing jurisdiction because the estate would be non-suited or would settle, and there was no mechanism for sending those cases back to the transferring court in another county. And so the legislature specifically amended the government code to permit that. Let me turn to 15.07. I think there are three questions that need to be answered, and that the Houston Court of Appeals opinion does not provide a satisfactory answer to any of these three questions. The first is what I raised with Justice Owen. Why did the legislature pick this language? The language is conflicting venue provisions. Particularly, if you look at our handout, what I tried to do was prepare a chronology of what's going on with changes because it's helpful to see all of these things in order. But on the first page in 1995, the legislature adopts 15.07. 3 years earlier, the court had held in Henry versus LeBron that the transfer provisions are not venue statutes. So we assume that the legislature chose its words carefully and that the two, in fact, do not conflict. In LeBron, the court held that even if venue were mandatory in another county, nonetheless, the statutory probate court could use the transfer provisions to transfer those cases to itself. And that decision has been followed by a number of courts in the Lanier versus Stem case and in the Henry Ramsey case. The Houston Court of Appeals reliant majority fails to provide any reasoned way to distinguish these cases. And I think the concurring justice asked the key question in this case. How can the transfer provisions be venue statutes for the purpose of 15.07, which is a permissive venue statute, but not be venue statutes for the purpose of mandatory venue? And I think the Austin Court of Appeals got the answer right. They said it can't be one thing for one purpose and another for another. It always has to be the same, and it's not a venue statute, and it's not a venue statute for the purpose of 1507.
In that opinion, there's a reference to probate code 8E, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I believe the concurrence in that case said that because that is a venue provision, that it presents a conflict with the 1507, and so therefore 1507 preempts. What do you think about that?
I think that analysis is a little hard to penetrate, but I would argue to you that it's wrong. If you look at that section of the probate code, it deals with concurrent venue, and so it addresses situations, for example, where a probate proceeding is capable of being filed in more than one county. For example, if the deceased doesn't have a permanent place of residence in the state, dies in the state, you can file a probate proceeding either in the county where the principal property of the decedent is located or in the county of death. So there's a potential for conflicting venue in a probate situation, and what Section 8 does is gives the first probate court where the first filing occurs the opportunity to determine venue first. And I think that's all that section does. I would not submit that it's a conflicting venue provision, particularly given this line of cases.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I do have one more question, Ms. Guerin, and I don't want to belabor the point. I'm not sure I understand your position on the question I asked. And if you're right, I want to know that. If you're wrong, I want to be able to figure that out, too. But to do either one, I need to understand it. If there's a probate proceeding in any of the 10 counties that you mentioned, and then related to that, there's a wrongful death action in a different county other than any of the 10, does 15.007 preclude the probate court in any of the 10 counties from transferring, if they so decide so, a wrongful death action from the other county to the 10 counties under any circumstances?
No.
Okay.
It does not.
So it never does?
No.
In your opinion?
Yes. Thank you.
May it please the court. Chief Justice, I'd like to start off answering a question that Ms. Barron answered as well. You were asking about the onward and upward expansion of the probate courts in the last 10 years, and I would refer the court in an answer to that question. The bill analysis to the 1999 change to 5B and 608 is attached as Exhibit 1 to the brief and the mandamus proceeding, and it's also, I believe, an exhibit to Ms. Barron's briefing. And it makes very clear that, and this is in 1999, that the transfer provisions were expanded to make sure that the transfer authority of the court was coexistent with the jurisdictional provisions. And it actually states, questions have arisen in litigation, and I believe the only cases those can possibly refer to are the D.B. Wendell case and the N. Ray Ford case, which is discussed in the briefs. Justice Owen, you asked a question.
Counsel, the bill analysis you're referring to, is that Exhibit H of Petitioner's Consolidated Brief for House Bill 2580?
I'm told that's correct. You're, Justice Wainwright.
Okay, the analysis doesn't say personal injury, wrongful death, or property damages at all.
But you
conclude that it clearly refers to those types of actions.
Yes, in the sense that it refers to any case that potentially could be filed within a probate proceeding, it makes the transfer power of the court consistent with that, and it's clear that wrongful death and personal injury and property damage cases can be filed in probate court, and there's jurisdiction in probate court for those. So it expands the jurisdiction so that they're co-equal on the transfer. But it does not refer to the three as in 1507. I agree with you. Justice Owen, you ask, does the term transfer imply or denote venue? And I think Ms. Barron answered that correctly, and I would refer the court to 15002B, which is the discretionary transfer provision, the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, and it actually uses the phrase, may transfer an action from a county of proper venue under this subchapter, subchapter C, to another county or proper venue. It is that, so the venue term in that case is built in with the transfer power, which does not, is not in 5A or 5B, I'm sorry, or 608. In fact, the transfer provisions in 608 and 5B read much more like transfer provisions in multi-district litigation and in bankruptcy court, where the bankruptcy courts take cases from all over the United States, put them in a single form without respect to venue. Justice Owen, let me ask, I'd like to answer another question you asked, and that is, why did they pass 15007 in the first instance? And there, in the statement of facts of the record before Judge Herman in the mandamus proceeding, he discusses that one of the reasons for passing it was to avoid a situation where, and he used the example in 1990, mine's run out of time.
No, when the red light comes on.
I'm sorry, I apologize. He used an example where a lawsuit was filed in 1990 to start a probate proceeding, and the lawyers filed the personal injury wrongful death case in probate and claimed that because they had good venue for the probate proceeding, they had the right to file the personal injury lawsuit. And what he says is 1507 keeps you from filing that lawsuit in the first instance in the probate proceeding and claiming you have good venue there because you have venue over the probate proceeding. That does not answer then the question that becomes, can we transfer the case back under 608 and 5B? And the answer is the statute on its face says you can.
I guess I'm struggling with why would they, if they want you to file the wrongful death suit in a county of proper venue to start with, and not to file it in the probate court, if that's not a county of proper venue, why would they turn around and say, but the probate court can always transfer it right back?
Because the probate court has the right to make that call in deciding how it's going to manage the estate and how it's going to handle issues with the guardian and ward. And the legislature can come back in and say, we don't want you to transfer the cases back. I mean, all they've got to do is amend 5B and 608 and make it real clear in the transfer authority, you do not have the power to transfer these cases back. And that is the remedy. If the legislature really wants to do that, they just need to amend the statute and say it, which I think creates the same situation that you have in Polaris. When you looked at the statute said you could join all these people in Maverick County. We understand the concerns with that, but go to the legislature, have them amend the statute to keep that from happening. And that is what needs to be done if the parties do not want to give the power of the probate court to make that call to bring a case back into probate.
In the excerpt from the Senate floor debate that's submitted with petitioner's brief, it's clear that at least some of the senators believe that that's what the 1995 statute did, 15.007. And I understand that that's contrary to your position. Your position seems to be that the legislature since 1995 should amend the probate court code to say the same thing. But 15.007 refers to the probate code already. Are you saying they need to act twice? Or are you saying 15.007, because it refers to venue provisions, is different from the probate code provision, which you think, I believe, refers to jurisdiction? Is that the sole reason why you think there's 15.007 doesn't govern these transfers?
The answer, I believe, is yes. And let me say this about the legislative history.
So if 15.007 said jurisdiction, you wouldn't be here. Instead of venue, you wouldn't be here.
Let me say this. There's a way to do this to keep these from being transferred. If you put, I don't know if you just change the words to do it, but there's a way to do it. You simply take away the transfer power under 5B and 608 as to these three types of cases. Whether you just change the word of 1507, that doesn't really make sense to me, because we're dealing with venue statutes when we deal with that provision of Civil Practice and Remedies Code. But there's a way to do it. We're not saying it can't be done, and if the legislature decides we don't want to give the power to the courts to do this, clearly there's a way to do that. In terms of the legislative history, because of time constraints, I would suggest this. There is about a 10-page discussion of the legislative history in Ms. Barron's brief, and one of the legislators discussed his opinion about what he thought 15.007 meant. I believe two other of the members during the floor debate felt like that the courts had the power to continue to transfer these cases, and one of the statements is equivocal in that regard. And I would refer you to that because I don't think that that debate can solve the question, and it does not clearly reflect that the legislature in 15, when it enacted 15.007, was intended to prevent transfer under the transfer provisions. My red light's on now. Justice Winger, I'm sorry.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. John Anopakis will present argument for the respondent. Ms. Liz Wiley will present argument for the relators. Mr. Anopakis will open the first 14 minutes.
Thank you. May it please the court. Your Honors, the under the argument that Gonzalez espouses for 15.007, Gonzalez could not file her wrongful death and survival lawsuit in Hidalgo County initially, but could file it in Harris County and then use Section 5B to transfer it down to Hidalgo County, a county of improper venue where she couldn't file it in the first place. That backward result is contrary to the legislative intent in 15.007, and it's contrary to the plain language of that anti-forum shopping statute. For that reason, because the legislature meant what it said, and because Gonzalez's conduct in this case was attempting to evade the important public policy against forum shopping, the anti-suit injunction that the first court granted was proper and should be affirmed.
Couldn't the legislature have used some clearer words in light of our LeGrone decision and just other legal concepts than just venue, if they truly meant for the probate court's upward march to be detoured here?
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, I think 15.007 is clear, and I think that there is some focus misdirected toward 5B as being the source of the conflict. Certainly, it's not been our position that 5B is the venue. Is a venue statute in the probate code. It's not the source of the conflict. Section 6 of the probate code, at least with respect to the decedent's estates, is the source of the conflict. That's the venue provision that that determines where the estate proceedings would be filed initially and where, therefore, the causes of action would be brought under 5B potentially. That conflict is very clear. Section 6 is denoted as a venue statute, so I think the legislature was clear in that regard. With respect to the guardianship proceedings, the venue section, again, it's not terribly difficult to spot. It's in Section 610. That's where the conflict exists. With respect to the 15.007 point, Your Honors, the conflict is between the sections that have been that I just alluded to, between Section 6 and 15.002 in our case, because under the general rule in our case, it's clear Harris County is the county of proper venue for the wrongful death and survival case, whereas Section 6, Hidalgo County, is the proper venue for the underlying estate proceedings. Now, 5B doesn't do anything to alter that fundamental requirement that a court, to exercise its jurisdiction, whether it's a statutory probate court or otherwise, has to have proper venue unless that venue is waived. For everything except for these three cases that are denoted in 15.007, the Section 5B transfer power will be able to operate, whether it's a legal malpractice case that was involved in the Great House case that's cited. But in three specific kinds of cases, death, property damage, and personal injury, the legislature, in its wisdom, has indicated those cases will not be subject to probate code venue, that civil practice remedies code venue will trump. The reason, I submit, is because those types of cases are the ones most likely to be used for forum shopping, which is what the legislature was attempting to put a stop to when it passed 15.07. And in fact, this case, and I suspect this guardianship proceeding that's at issue in the consolidated case, those proceedings exist for the, not for the administration of the state, but frankly, for the filing of the lawsuit. There's not much to administer in the Gonzalez estate. And so those kinds of cases where the legislature wanted to focus in and prevent this type of forum shopping. Now, the 1999 amendments that we've heard some discussion about were housekeeping in nature. They they made the grant of jurisdiction of Section 5A match up with Section 5B's transfer power. But as has been noted, there is nothing in the legislative history of the 1999 amendments to suggest that the legislature was somehow doing an about-face, was going back and saying 15.007 should be trumped by 5B. And in fact, the legislative debate with respect to HB 4 suggests that the legislature's intent has been consistent since 1995. And most importantly, 5B and 15.007 can be read consistently in a way that makes sense, that affects the legislative intent and the plain meaning. That is, the 5B transfer power, admittedly it's broad, has a limit. That limit is in three kinds of cases where there's a conflict between Civil Practice Remedies Code venue and Probate Code venue. That's the limit to Section 5B. That's what the legislature has told us. And that, we submit, is the way that certainly the correct way to view the interaction of those two. That's what the first court did. We suggest that that opinion should be affirmed. One question that was raised to Ms. Barron, which is essentially, how does 15.007 have any meaning in this case? And what Ms. Barron was alluding to was the fact that their position essentially allows 15.007 to function only in non-statutory probate courts. Now, there's much mention in the briefing about the fact that there are only 10 statutory probate courts. But as a practical matter, those 10 statutory probate courts are located in all of the large metropolitan areas. Petitioners reading of 15.007 would effectively gut it for an enormous percentage of the litigation in this state.
Mr. Anapakis, in 5B, the last sentence, which talks about concurrent jurisdiction between the statutory probate court and the district court, and in that situation, any cause of action pertaining to a mistake or incident to a mistake shall be brought in the statutory probate court rather than in the district court. Were there any changes to that language since 1995, that specific sentence in 5B?
Have there been any changes to Section 5A-B, that last sentence, since it's been put in there, Your Honor? To my knowledge, no.
Or at least since 1995?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Okay.
I don't believe there have been any changes to that.
If you find otherwise, could you let us know?
Absolutely, Your Honor. In fact, I believe that language has been in there. But I would say that even if there had been changes since 1995, the fact of the matter is there is no legislative intent that either party has been able to uncover that suggests that any sort of tweaking that the legislature has done with respect to these provisions was in any way meant to affect what they had very purposefully done in 15.07.
What does probate court section 8E mean that gives the probate court jurisdiction to determine venue of a proceeding and it shall not be subject to collateral attack? What is that all about?
Your Honor, that is an excellent question. And I admittedly, it is the focus of Justice Kai's concurrence, and it is a section that neither party has relied on. And I think Ms. Barron put it that it is difficult to parse, and I have to concur with that. I am not entirely clear as to what Section 8E, jurisdiction to determine venue, relates to. I can simply say, Your Honor, it is obviously in the concurrent venue section of the probate code. I can simply say that is not the source for the conflict that we claim under 15.007. In other words, Section 8E is not the venue provision that we are relying on for the conflict.
Do you have any legislative history as to why Section 608 was not amended in the session that just ended, but so many other sections were?
Do not, Your Honor. Do not. There's no indication that, that for some reason that was not done. I don't know that it was purposeful or if it was overlooked, but no idea. Your Honors, I would.
Make clear here. Where do you say the conflict is between 15.007 and the probate code?
The general venue rule that would apply would be under 15.002. Our principal place of business is Harris County.
No, I'm talking between 15.007 and the probate code.
Yes, Your Honor, and the conflict is with Section 6 in the probate code. So that Section 6 provides for venue in the county in which the decedent had his domicile or fixed place of residence. at the time of his death.
What about 5A, that Judge Wainwright just mentioned? Do you see a conflict there?
No, Your Honor. That talks about concurrent jurisdiction. It certainly doesn't do anything other than reiterate that there's concurrent jurisdiction between the two, and where there is proper, where consistent with other law, the cause of action can be filed in statutory probate court. It should be brought there rather than the district court. But it doesn't, in and of itself, read out the requirement of Section 15.007 that for those three types of cases, venue has got to be proper under the general rule. Your Honors, and this is an issue that has not received much attention in the first court's opinion, and I just raise it here, but it is also the position of Reliant that Gonzalez's conduct in this case, which admittedly is a unique set of circumstances, caused dominant jurisdiction to vest in the Harris County Court, and that as a result of dominant jurisdiction vesting in the Harris County Court, the anti-suit injunction that was granted was proper to address the threat to the Harris County Court's dominant jurisdiction. Typically, of course, the first filed case would have dominant jurisdiction, but there are exceptions to that, particularly where a party's conduct is such that it stops the party from asserting the dominant jurisdiction of the first filed case. Here, the record is replete with evidence, both in terms of admissions from counsel as to why this whole procedure was done, which was specifically to deprive Reliant of an ability to appeal or argue venue on appeal. The duplicative lawsuit in Harris County with no intent to prosecute. That record, which was before the Harris County judge, was more than enough to justify the anti-suit injunction. And we believe and submit, Your Honors, that the Court of Appeals acted properly on that basis as well, and that the anti-suit injunction can be affirmed on that basis, separate and apart from the Section 5B 15.007 issue. Admittedly, that's unique to this case, but that is a point that...
Are you, in effect, saying that is, in a way, sanctionable conduct? I mean, one question is, if it is just a matter of litigation strategy to put their client in the best position, they think venue is best, the form is better, and the rules permit it, then why should we use that as a hammer against it, if it's permitted?
I'm not suggesting that this was sanctionable conduct. I think the court's point is well taken, that if there's some ambiguity and if it's in the client's best interest, zealous advocacy, I guess what I'm simply saying is that there is a basis for affirming the anti-suit injunction that deals with dominant jurisdiction principles and those going to Harris County that is separate and apart from this issue of Section 5B and 15.007.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Much of the discussion this morning and in the briefing, of course, has been jurisdiction, jurisdiction, jurisdiction. And as we know, jurisdiction goes to the power of the court. And we've talked about the expanding jurisdiction of the probate courts. And notably absent from all that discussion is, well, what about venue? And I'd like to go back and think about, let's pretend 15.007 doesn't exist for a moment. And we look just at the broad statutory grant of jurisdiction in the probate code provisions, including the transfer provision. Well, I've been flummoxed to figure out where has this notion come about exactly, that jurisdiction can be so broad and judicial efficiency so important that that's a formula that automatically equals venue or relevant. And frankly, none of those cases talk about this. There are lots of rules that we know as civil law practitioners that are overlaid into a court that has power to operate. Rules of procedure, rules of evidence. We don't presume to see each and every stratagem available mentioned to be applicable in a jurisdiction statute. Yet for some reason, that does seem to be the crux of this argument, that we would like to see venue specifically mentioned in the transfer provisions in order for it to apply. But
we sure don't expect that in any other basic jurisdiction provision. We know that such basic procedures, so endemic to Texas civil law, apply no matter where we are. So to think that venues are relevant just because of jurisdiction being broad for whatever reason, I think gets us off on the wrong track. And none of the cases really hit it hard to see why, where has this come about. They just seem to repeat each other. This venue provision and the transfer authority is broad for judicial efficiency. Therefore, we have to apply it as written.
I'm intrigued by your argument, but part of the reason we may be focusing on this is that we've treated probate court jurisdiction as trumping normal venue courts for past decisions. And in that sort of a...
Well, I believe you're speaking about Chief Justice Phillips of Henry Graham or Henry Sweppy, perhaps. I believe
I was thinking of Henry, but I hadn't. But maybe Sweppy, too.
In those two cases, the court has addressed. We didn't get to the venue. The venue issue was not addressed. I believe in Sweppy, it was rather whether the claim regarding the partnership interest and the royalties and that Bailey lawsuit in Harris County was appertaining to. That was the only issue there. And Graham was the divorce proceeding, whether that could be transferred. In fact, in the same county, whether that could be transferred.
But we have allowed probate courts to trump the normal rules of venue for a long time. We've had an overlay of what venue was, and then we have had probate.
Right. Well,
some centralizing authority, and we've given a lot more authority, the legislature has, to the statutory probate courts than to the normal court jurisdiction.
And that brings up the point that discretionary may is in that transfer authority in 608. So we know. And so I would, with that segue into 1507, mention that now we do have a statute that, as Justice Owen was pointing out, does envision, presuppose a conflict with something in the probate code. It mentions conflict. The conflict presupposes two different things. It envisions the fact that you could have a case with a personal representative as the party, that's a personal injury case, and that for whatever reason, in whatever forum, it might be subject to a probate code provision, hence the conflict language. Or, given the nature of the case, it could be subject to a different general venue rule provision. It envisions that conflict. It envisions that there would be competing policy concerns, obviously, to make that be a different result in those two different cases. Probate code venue versus personal injury maybe venue, and it addressed that. So I think, of course, it does not seem crystal clear, and admit the legislature does not speak with such crystal clear clarity at all times, and I've tried to think myself, how would I phrase that better, I think, and I haven't gotten very far. But we do have some basic rules of statutory interpretation that fill the digest to help us out when the language there doesn't perhaps... that the conflict of venue provision language people have stumbled over. But there's some pretty basic ones. We don't have to dig very deep into some basic statutory principles. And as Justice Owen had mentioned, we sure don't want to read it out of existence. We've talked about some instances it could be applicable.
Where do you say the conflict is?
Our conflict, as mentioned before, would be the fact that guardianship proceeding was venue was established in the Travis County Probate Court under Section 610 of the Probate Code. And indeed, the application for the permanent guardianship of the estate, I believe it's Exhibit 1 to that supplemental mandamus record, shows that statement that venue is good in Travis County because the ward resides in Harris County. And of course, it makes perfect sense that due to the very beneficent and worthy goals of why we have guardianships and loose venue provisions for those, if you need a guardianship, you want to make sure we can do it handily wherever the ward might be to get that protection in place. Those are some very significant policy determinations that have gone into why venue is done that way under a probate code policy determination.
But how does that conflict with 15007? That's what I'm having.
Well, I don't think it necessarily conflicts with 15007, Justice O'Neill. It's that 15007 gives us some instruction. What do we do in this instance? We're in one court with one type of proceeding, the guardianship proceeding here, yet conflict envision that there's going to be a different type of lawsuit, one for personal injury, death, or property damage. And what do we do when we have two possible venue schemes implicated by this type of case? So I would say that 1507 doesn't per se conflict. It just tells us where to go in the case of a tie or some competing policy concerns between a probate code determination for venue in a particular case and how venue might otherwise be determined in this instance, a personal injury case under the general venue rules. And of course,
Reliant has raised a question whether there was forum shopping involved in its litigation, but you don't take that position in this case.
Not so much, Your Honor. I was going to mention that, Justice Hecht, and that I think it's unfortunate the choice of language the Court of Appeals used in their decision, and that suggested, I believe their exact words were along the lines of, there is no evidence of forum shopping in this record. And I would suggest that that's an improper hurdle to hold up, if that's how they meant it, in order for 15.007 to kick in. That the forum shopping emphasis in our briefing picks up on the legislative purpose of those 1995 venue reforms. And as we were mentioning, those reforms were based on, let's look at a way of determining venue that can't be unilaterally changed by anyone at all, plaintiffs or defendants. Let's keep it focused on some, you know, basic immutable facts that can't change. Place of occurrence, obviously, as we mentioned, Senator Montfort being a big fan of. And so when you have that, the opportunity to pick a more favorable venue is taken away to some extent. Of course, there's some room for maneuvering still, but we still have some objective facts that the legislature was trying to take out of play any sort of after-the-fact changes for suspect reasons or not. So forum shopping is not necessarily a pejorative term. You know, they were just trying to make it more fair and objective and not have people changing the rules of the game, getting suits at different places with no factual moorings to the actual cause of action. So I would say that was an improper, you know, suggestion. We need some kind of evidence, and I don't know what that evidence would be, honestly. It'd be hard to get some direct evidence. Some cases might do it. In our case, we have the fact that there's nothing in that guardianship estate at all. As the application shows, the only property for that guardianship estate is the actual claim, is the cause of action. There are no funds. I believe there's some mention of it. It needs to be set up in order to, you know, manage any settlement or, you know, funds in the judgment. But there is no judgment. You know, that there has been no settlement. Circumstantial evidence, of course, may be as a mechanism used to get to a particular spot for a particular reason. But so I would disagree that there's some sort of evidentiary hurdle of form shopping that a hearing that one has to go through to get more concrete evidence.
The particular facts of your case set aside for a moment, just looking at the statutory language. Judge Wainwright read the sentence out of section section 5A(b), the last sentence. It says where you have concurrent jurisdiction with the district court and with the probate court, any cause of action appertaining to the estate or incident to the estate shall be brought in the probate court rather than the district court. Now, what does that mean to you?
Would
assuming that the guardianship had been filed before the lawsuit in this case, would you be required to bring, would the plaintiff have been required to bring the lawsuit in the probate court?
I'm honestly not sure about that. I looked into that because it seems like it was opening the door to and in fact, I read a law review article, and I can get the cite to the court, that type of language was not meant to open up a whole watershed of having all litigation in a statutory probate court whenever an estate was implicated. In fact, one can imagine all sorts of instances in personal injury cases, toxic tort litigation in which there are deceased plaintiffs, those huge cases in which there are estates, and conceivably one could imagine one could, if that meant that, you know, what I think you're suggesting that it says, that there's some sort of exclusive jurisdiction there. I don't think that's right. I think they were just trying to get at the point that one should, and you can abate perhaps if you wanted to file it somewhere else, and they had that option, but they chose not to bring it there. I'm not sure if they had to.
What does that language mean? What was it getting at?
I believe what I read about that, Justice Owen, and I can follow up with that in a later letter brief, that because the statutory probate court already has jurisdiction, it might make sense to bring it there in the first instance. But given that this case doesn't have that, and no one brought up that situation whatsoever, I don't think it's, you know, as you say, there are facts aside.
We're just trying to look at the statute.
Sure, I understand. And but let me get that cite for you, because I believe there was a rationale based on the overruling of Say versus Hall and the legislative enactments that said, you know, that language was not aimed at opening the floodgates to making all these personal injury death cases filed there in the first instance.
and I can't remember what they based that on, but it was just sort of a practical interpretation of it. I'd mention just in closing real briefly, as Chief Justice Phillips mentioned, the statutory, the House Bill 4 amendments. And I too, have failed to find anything that explains why they amended just the 607 and not 608. However, I'd point out that, as we mentioned in the briefing, 607 addresses, has a notwithstanding any other provision in that chapter, and 608 would fall within that purview.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
That concludes the argument on the second set of causes, and the court will now take another brief recess.
All rise.